Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 209. In the news, just to recap, last week we did speak with Frater O, and we also had Brother Greg Kaminsky on the program from the Occult of Personality podcast. If you didn't check that episode out, or you haven't checked out his podcast yet, I urge you to go do so. Great amounts of information are there. We've got a good show this week. I have a paper from the Illinois Lodge of Research that I'll be reading, as well as two segments. Brother Stephen L. Harrison stops by with his Masonic Minute, and we have another segment. The segment actually grew out of an idea to have dinner with a good friend of mine and record the conversation. We went to a kind of trendy restaurant, and it was a bit loud, and so rather than distract you with 45 to 50 minutes of guys talking in a restaurant with this noise behind us, I thought we'd break it up into segments, and this way you're going to get the benefit of the great talking points that we had. It was a great time, and you've heard me say the guy's name before. It's Brother Daniel Gentry, who is one of the most successful intenders in the Northeast area, I believe, in his abilities to influence and to make sure that candidates for the degrees are meeting their own goals and meeting their own expectations. He really, you know, takes it under his wing. I always quote him as saying, "No brother left behind," because that's what he does. He's phenomenal at it. In any case, not much going on in the news this week. I just want to say again, thanks to everybody for listening and for buying all the pins and the money clips and the cufflinks and all those great things that we've got going on right now to support the show. A little bit of a shortage running on the book, which is Freemasons, Tales from the Craft by Stephen L. Harrison. I only have six copies at the time I'm recording this, six copies left. So if you want it from a brother to a brother with way better packaging than Amazon, matched at Amazon's price, head on over to www.wcypodcast.com and click on the support the show links, or you can click on the limited edition store and we will get those out to you. But without any further delay, we'll get right into the paper. All right, I am reading this paper straight from paper copy, so if you hear the old paper rustling, then you know what's going on. This one is called Ritual Instruction in Masonry, Its Early History, by Dr. Stephen R. Greenberg, 33rd degree. Masonry emerged from a myriad of trade guilds and craft groups that strongly desired to obtain employment and wage advantages. When the early craft began to crystallize into a meaningful establishment, the need for some form of ritual was deemed expedient in order to provide the craft with lasting values. Instead of unifying its adherence to the introduction of formal activity, the early Masons were driven apart by its perplexity. A man might travel but a short distance to receive a fraternal lesson, much altered from his initial ceremony. There was no imparted standards and real meaning to those principles exposed by the craft. Almost at once, with the formation of the Premier Grand Lodge in London in 1717, the need for the formation of proper Masonic instruction was perceived. Without some kind of unifying force, the craft would be obliged to fall into an abyss of confusion, forever lost as a positus imprimis. What followed in the wake of this great issue in a former time is an intensely interesting and sometimes neglected segment of Masonic history, the formulation of a uniform ritual pattern and the fashioning of a means for its promulgation. The purpose of this paper is to trace the genesis of ritual education that has across the centuries deepened into modern schools of teaching and practice. Primitive Masonry may have appeared in England much before the 18th century in the form of a group of works found in widely separated parts of the country, from Scotland to North and Central England. These were subsequently subdivided into what became recognized as catechisms, named the Graham, the Edinburgh Register House, the Essex, and the Chesham, and the Chetwode Crawley, along with several less known ones. Perhaps earliest of all Masonic documents was the famous Regis manuscript, which bears the date of 1390. A common thread linking all of these initial writings was the fabrication of firm standards upon which the craft of operative Masons might govern itself. The primordial ritual work were of two varieties. One was esoteric, which was communicated only from mouth to ear, The other was monitorial, consisting largely of symbolism, and was set in printed form. In general, such masonry was quite devoid of exact language. Its presentation depended largely upon the literary ability of the lodge officers. Though it could be interesting and even entertaining, the discourse was more often meager in content and barren of significance. Above all, it was provincial and disunited. The initial attempts to rectify the disastrous situation into which early English masonry had descended were made by Dr. Anderson and Dr. John de Sauclier, who arranged Masonic lectures in the style of the catechisms employed by the Roman Catholic Church. These were later revised, but still contained many inherent imperfections. About 1750, Thomas Dunkerley, who was regarded widely as the most intelligent Freemason of his time, ventured with no small amount of literary ability to extend and improve these lectures. His efforts remained as the standard until 1763. Reverend William Hutchinson, at this time, appended yet another revision of this work, but this paled in fact and form when compared with its predecessor. The separation of Masonry into 3 degrees was strongly emphasized by Hutchinson. These were presented as the patriarchal, the Mosaic, and the Christian. For the first time, the 3 great pillars, wisdom, strength, and beauty, were suggested, as were the 4 cardinal virtues. 2 men were most responsible for the eventual evolution of modern Masonic ritual. These were William Preston in England and Thomas Smith Webb in America. William Preston, born at Edinburgh in 1742 into a family of considerable means, his father provided him with a fine education which prepared him well for the important work he was to pursue in Masonry. Preston was made a Mason in 1772 in a lodge which met at the White Hart Tavern in the Strand District of London. In time, he was elected to the Oriental Chair in his lodge. At once, he began to enforce discipline, both in Masonic conduct and in ritual work. With an intense passion, Preston strove to improve his knowledge of the craft, especially in matters of ritual. For this, he sought out the most experienced Masons from across the continent. Soon, he commenced a series of Masonic lectures that achieved great popularity. At the Grand Banquet held in 1772, at the Crown and Anchor Tavern in Strand, several Grand Lodge officers in attendance heard Preston deliver a lecture on Masonry, so well structured that it was placed in the first edition of the Illustrations of Masonry published later that year. Subsequently, Preston completed his system of Masonic lectures, much of which still finds usage in every Masonic lodge across the world. It was this great leader who admonished his brethren to transmit the mysteries of the craft from mouth to ear. There shall be the most perfect unity of obligation, of discipline in lodge, of Masonic initiation, passing, raising, instruction, instructing, and clothing brothers, so that but one and pure, unsullied system, according to the genuine landmarks, laws, and traditions of the craft, shall be maintained, upheld, and practiced throughout the Masonic world from the day and date of said union until time shall be no more. Owing to the absence of literacy among the brethren, emphasis was not directed toward the philosophical discourse, but was more often set down in the forms of questions and answers, transmitted only by word of mouth. In such discourse, the ceremonies of initiation assumed a major focus for the operative craftsman in the later parts of the 18th century, also for the speculative or accepted Mason. The first reference to the division of the craft into these degrees appears in the manuscript from the Trinity College of Dublin, dated 1711. The first arrangement of Masonic ceremonies into the form of catechisms was alluded to in the writings of Pritchard entitled Masonry Dissected that appeared in October of 1730. The catechisms were penned and are more elaborate than in any previous form. In it are addressed questions to those already admitted to Masonic ranks. These are accompanied by answers which rehearse the ceremonies of admission. There is no reference to prayer nor to any charge given to the candidate. Such would appear at a later time. Here, however, is found a step drawing the craft closer to the modern era. A catechism that occurred in England at about the same time is known as the Grand Mystery of Freemasonry Discovered. This represents an even more detailed description of the ceremonies of initiation, much like those of modern times. 200 years has served well to forge an unbreakable link in a kindred chain that can never be broken. From the genesis of the craft in 1717, a need for the proper instruction in fraternal codes was envisioned. This was first expressed in the Articles of Union of the 2 English Grand Lodges in 1813. 2 fundamental issues existing relating to ritual practice, The first is the absence of agreement for proper procedure. Secondly is a lack of uniformity in the content of instruction. The latter stems in large measure from the want, until recent times, of a standard printed ritual. The transmission of Masonry from mouth to ear, often complicated by memory lapses and word substitutions, has led to work far afield from its source and content. Regional differences in Masonry have frequently appeared but are not a real problem. These may, in fact, create an interest in membership attendance from one jurisdiction to another. The regulation of ritual conducted in each of the lodges with the English constitution was left to the decision of the master, acting in concord with the majority of the brethren. Such a situation has prevailed up to 1973. More recently, there is an expressed intention to encourage a common standard of ritual throughout the confines of the United English Grand Lodge. There is a common thread existing beyond the ritual differences representing those ancient landmarks that have existed from time immemorial across the world. By this, each Mason may know another and share in a common experience unique among its adherents, a mystic tie. In a world, it would seem that some forms of ritual were worked in the early years after the establishment of the Premier Grand Lodge in 1717. The use of the catechism as a teaching vehicle occurred initially during the latter half of the 18th century, and by the 19th century, under the strong influence of William Preston, this became a widely accepted plan for Masonic instruction. In these formative times, there were few printed books. Ritual lessons were conveyed solely by oral means. Many schools were restricted to members of specific lodges. As a consequence, many Masonic bodies became independent. The ritual practiced among them assumed many forms with almost no central authority. Lodge membership was small. Few had qualified instructors. A possible solution to this quandary was provided by the creation of general lodges of instruction conducted by knowledgeable Masons of the time, at which any brother wishing instruction might so receive it. In this period before the union of the two Grand Lodges, William Preston emerged as a dominant figure. It was he who first attempted to bring order out of the perplexity then rampant in the order. During the final decade of the 18th century, Preston introduced his work entitled Illustrations of Masonry, in which he established 3 degrees of Masonry along with a system of ritualistic teaching termed lectures. These were, in reality, a system of questions and answers based upon the ceremonies that ultimately formed the prototype for the ritual instruction in the lodges of antiquity. Preston's methods became a model and were exemplified publicly, 1 or 2 times each year at the public nights held by the Steward's Lodge, later the Grand Steward's Lodge in London, by the leading ritualists to demonstrate and to apply a measure of control over the authorized work of the Premier Grand Lodge, albeit there was yet a lack of uniformity in work among the existing lodges, not making use of this system. In 1810, the English Grand Lodge constituted a lodge of promulgation to advance a universal ritual code by adopting a series of alterations designed to facilitate a needed union within the fraternal ranks. The Lodge of Promulgation later came under the influence of the Lodge of Antiquity. A number of important English brethren held appointments in both of these bodies. Notable among them was the Duke of Sussex, who, as the master of the Lodge of Antiquity from 1809 to 1843, became a towering figure in British Masonry of the last century. Under his aegis, the work of the lodges in Britain was strengthened, and a general agreement in ritual matters was accomplished with surprising speed. When the union of the two Grand Lodges occurred in 1813, the task of further ritual unification was given over to a body created especially for that purpose, the Lodge of Reconciliation. This was completed successfully in the year 1815, and promptly approved by the United Grand Lodge. In its final form, Preston's lectures were to be utilized only in amended form to serve as a bridge toward a new pathway. William Preston probably contributed little to this revision because he was now too old and ill. He died in 1818 at the age of 76 years. His lectures were at the time being presented only in the Lodge of Antiquity and subsequently utilized only in a limited fashion. From 1852 to 1862, these presentations were held only for larger groups assembled in conjunction with the public nights at the Grand Steward's Lodge. As this plan for Masonic education deviated from the designs of contemporary usage, the ritual uniformity much desired was not achieved. Preston's lectures dropped in popularity. They were revived in 1924 in a format in which a lecturer delivered a paper on Masonic subjects of his choosing, a format that exists to this time. In April of 1813, the Duke of Sussex, who was destined to become an eminent Masonic figure during the next half century, assumed the office of Grand Master. Almost at once, he launched upon a course of fraternal unification which encompassed the grand jurisdictions of both Ireland and Scotland. Within 1 year, this was achieved by the formation of the Lodge of Reconciliation in August of 1814. Its purpose was to promulgate a more easily assimilated form of ritual. Frequent demonstrations were presented, with much interest being shown by members of the craft. They desired uniformity envisioned by the Grand Master, however, failed to appear. New lectures for each of the three degrees were prepared by Samuel Hemings and William Williams. These discourses soon came into question because they were appeared in a printed form, notwithstanding that William Williams was a prominent provincial Grand Master from Dorsetshire, and Samuel Hemings was a church official of considerable note. It was firmly believed by members of the craft that nothing of a Masonic character should ever be penned. Although no system of instruction ever received official sanction by the Grand Lodge of England, the ritual exemplification given by the Grand Steward's Lodge was accepted as standard for many years. By 1857, however, interest in this activity had almost disappeared, so that 10 years later, in 1867, the famous public nights were, at last, abandoned. In summation, it should be borne in mind that the delivery of proper ritual in any age thought essential is not the raison d'etre of the craft. It constitutes a significant means for transmitting those ideals cherished by good men across the face of the earth. Formal ceremony does occupy a significant fraternal component, but this is not the total sum of Masonry. A man can be a good man and true Mason without possessing any inherent skill in ritual. He needs only to pursue the basic tenets of the order to become its most zealous member. The principal role of ritual is in its advancing of the craft by lessons, example, and dignity. This constitutes the real education throughout the ages of the gentle craft. It is not how rapidly we are moving that really matters, but in which direction we are traveling. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed that little bit of history on the ritual and how it kind of came to be today, and how it is interesting that ritual and catechisms and things of this nature are sometimes used and sometimes not used, and there's a lot of debate over all that. So however you feel about it, maybe drop us a note on the Facebook page or on Google Plus or somewhere and let us know how you feel about catechisms, and if you think men should memorize that whole and completely, or if you think they should just be able to give you a rundown of their own understanding of it to be passed to the next degree, or should we not use them at all? It's an interesting question, and the United States has different answers to that in every corner of this great nation. We have in Illinois a very loose standard on catechism. We push for what we call proficiency, and by proficiency that means you went long form, you gave the lecture back in open lodge, but there's also a short form, and there's also a way to describe the degree and your grips, passwords, and all that secret stuff. And that's a way to pass to the next degree as well. So we have an interesting set here. Most of the time people do a long-form catechism, though. But it's always up to the candidate, because it is their journey. Next, we're going to go into a new segment called Dinner with Dan. Dinner with Dan is a short segment that I talked about in the beginning of the program. And in this segment, we pick it up right as Brother Dan and I started talking about something very sensitive in Masonry, which is titles. We had talked a little bit about when officers with titles use them for the wrong reasons or use their titles for some sort of clout. Now, they've achieved their title in Masonry, and they are due respect. However, when somebody is tossing a title around in your face, it's almost rude. And I'm sure you guys understand what I'm talking about, and in no way am I disrespecting anybody with a title. I mean, I have a few myself, but we are brothers, and ultimately that's what Brother Dan and I started talking about. So I'll let you guys check it out. It's just a 2.5-3 minute segment, Dinner with Dan.
My problem with titles isn't titles. I mean, don't get me wrong.
It's that people chase them.
And that's part of the problem. The problem I have is when I sit down to talk to people on something I have studied, and I'm leading them through a process, first off, I get the hit because I don't give direct answers. I never say, oh, the answer to your question is blah, blah, blah. Hey, I found here, there's this, I found here, there's this. And I guide them to a point. But I hate it when people come up in that conversation and be like, well, you know, my opinion being a right worshipful, and I just had dinner with the Grand Deputy Warden's assistant with the Grand Master himself at the table. Well, he was actually two tables down.
Yeah.
And because of all these great titles I can present you, or even their own titles. Well, you know, I was past master three times, and in my opinion, it shares no validity to the conversation we've got, because there's people who wait a long time to get in the lines. They study a lot first. And I know that falls into the Robert Johnson gimmick, but there's people that jump into the line, get to a past master, and then just have an opinion about everything without actually doing any research. And those are the people that irritate me with the titles.
Or, I love my secretary because, maybe it's just because he's cynical. Carl has been right worshipful Donahue for like, ever. I give him that title because he never, ever signs his name RW. He never, ever says it to anybody. That's why.
He likes the title brother. That's my point. We had a visitor who was, It turned out to be the DDGM for a different section altogether right here. And I was like, oh, this is the brother. And I was like, well, is it right worshipful? He was like, no, you got it right the first time. And I was like, and at that point, it didn't click that I had said brother already.
Right.
Because now I'm messing with titles in my head.
And you know what was awesome? I love the grandmasters that come through that are like down homeboys.
Off the farm, yeah.
Seward was one of those guys. He commanded Grand Lodge, like, really well. When I met him at the Grand Master's dinner, and it was just out of habit, and I walked by and I shook his hand, I was like, evening, brother. And I just kept walking. And I was like, oh, shit. That was probably, like, totally bad. I should have been, like, worshipful or whatever. And then he got up, and I couldn't have been the only person to do that all night. Lots of people did. But he got up and he said, that's the best thing, is thanks for, you know, addressing me as worshipful or whatever he goes, but my favorite is just bro. Much respect.
No greater title.
There is.
A very good talk with Dan, and I hope you guys enjoy. We broke those into segments because of all the background noise. I didn't know if it would be something you guys could handle, if you didn't like it or what, but leave us some feedback, because if you do like it and you don't mind the background noise, we can make those segments longer. If you find them a little distracting, then perhaps we'll keep them in chunks, and we'll kind of integrate little pieces of gems in that conversation into the next few episodes. We talked for about 45 minutes, and we have a lot of material that we can put in anywhere, and I think it's a good little segment, and we'll keep them going. Later on, we will have a one-on-one with Dan talking about specifically No Brother Left Behind, which is something I kind of put on him because he doesn't leave anybody behind. He's very good that way. We're going to move right along to Brother Stephen L. Harrison's awesome Masonic Minute segment.
One evening in 1948, the President of the United States evaded the press, his entourage, and some of his Secret Service agents to sneak off and attend a Master Mason degree at Beech Grove Lodge number 694 in Indianapolis. There, he participated as one of his employees became a Master Mason. As many times as this story has been told, little has been said about the man Truman raised that evening. Who was he? What became of him? Did he become a true and faithful brother among us as we pray in the first degree? Did he and Truman remain friends? The young man was Donald Earl Bauermeister. Born August 24, 1927, he was 21 years old at the time of his raising. He had recently enlisted in the Navy and served as a hospitalman third class on the President's yacht, Williamsburg. When he assisted with a crew member's emergency appendectomy, he caught Truman's attention. The pair found they shared an interest in history and, over time, developed a friendship. After his naval service, Don enrolled in the Indiana University Dental School. In 1950, he met his future wife, Lois, and when they decided to marry, Don wrote the president to inform him of his wedding plans. He updated the president on his schoolwork and also asked if he would meet with his parents when they were in Washington, D.C. Truman wrote back saying he would meet with Don's parents. He concluded, "I waited 10 years too long before I assumed the responsibility of matrimony. It pleases me when one of the young men with whom I have been associated buckles down to work and makes good." Truman sent the young couple a silver tray as a wedding gift. Over the years, Brother Don made a few requests of the president, who never turned him down. On one occasion, Don and his wife Lois went to Washington and tried to phone the president, but he was unavailable. Some months later, however, the tables were turned. Truman visited Indianapolis. Once there, he went to his friend's house, only to find he was out of town. In 1951, Don traveled to Washington, D.C. While there, he went to the White House unannounced and asked to see the president. Matthew J. Connolly, who was Truman's personal secretary, said Truman was too busy to break away. Brother Bauermeister urged Connolly to contact the president anyway, which Connolly reluctantly did. The Korean War was raging, the Middle East was in turmoil, and the president had a crammed schedule. He literally had the weight of the world on his shoulders. Yet, he made time to see his young friend. The pair exchanged gifts, Christmas, and birthday greetings. Bauermeister sought out Truman's advice on several occasions. Truman counseled him on subjects including masonry, schooling, and a career choice. On the president's 65th birthday, Don sent him a fifth of Old Granddad. One would assume Brother Harry enjoyed that more than the accompanying card and the not-so-subtle reference to the president's increasing age. In 1956, Don and Lois traveled to Independence to visit the retired president in his office at the Truman Library. It was the last time they saw each other in person. Don and Lois settled down on the south side of Indianapolis, not far from the lodge where Brother Truman had raised him. After graduating from the Indiana University School of Dentistry, Don established a practice and went on to become a respected Indianapolis dentist. He never held a Masonic office, but remained a member of Beech Grove Lodge No. 694 for the remainder of his life. Don passed away on August 5, 1994, at the age of 66. Prior to her death in 2014, I was privileged to interview his wife, Lois. During the conversation, I asked what caused his somewhat untimely death. She paused, sighed, and then she said, "Those damned cigarettes." Many men have formed friendships bonded in masonry. This one is certainly one of the most unique. It was a friendship between two very different men. One was a successful and special man, but of no remarkable status. The other was a man of destiny, the leader of the free world. In part, the fact they shared a friendship says something not only about the country, but also the time they lived in. In today's world of sound bites and handlers, it might not even be possible. Truman easily could have declined to attend Donald's raising, but he didn't, and both men's lives were richer for it. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. Always awesome, great stuff Brother Stephen L. Harrison has. He brings the history to life for us. And if you like stories just like that, you're going to want to pick up Freemason's Tales from the Craft. It is an amazing, great book with tons of little stories that are great conversation starters that'll get your mind reeling, that you want to write papers about. Trust me, it's great. I have, again, like I said, 6 copies left of this book that you can get from a brother to a brother. Of course, Amazon.com will send it to you however many times it's Amazon.com. They are printers of their own material, so they can produce them infinitum. I cannot. But the great news is that we sell them for $18, the same as Amazon, and you get it from a brother that includes shipping, and we sell them for just a few dollars more internationally, so anywhere else on this planet. So go ahead and check out the limited edition shop on WCYpodcast.com, and you can get that really cool book from brother Stephen L. Harrison. And with that, we're going to go right into this week's Famous Freemason. Now, this week is a little bit of a sad one, and it hits close to home. How close? Well, real close. Valley of Chicago. Illustrious brother Walter William, or Billy Pierce. He was a member of the Valley of Chicago, and he was a 33rd degree brother there, and he is our famous Mason, and he just passed away. I will read his in memoriam, and for his friends, his family, and for his fans, and people who knew him, this is the obituary that was put out from the Valley of Chicago, Scottish Rite. Let it be known by all, illustrious Walter W. Billy Pierce, 33rd degree, has been summoned by the Supreme Architect of the Universe to eternal refreshment in the Paradise of God on Friday, July 31st, 2015. Walter William Pierce was born on April 2nd, 1927 in Detroit, Michigan, to parents John Walter Pierce and Julia Elizabeth Cohn. Even before graduating from Highland Park High School in Michigan, Billy was signed to play for the Detroit Tigers, where he made his major league debut in June of 1945. He went on to play 18 major league seasons, primarily with the Chicago White Sox, and wrapping up his career with the San Francisco Giants. Billy led the American League in complete games 3 times, and to wins, ERA, and strikeouts once each. The White Sox retired his number 19 in 1987 and unveiled a statue in his honor at the U.S. Cellular Field in 2007. He is enshrined as a member of the Michigan Hall of Fame, the Chicago Hall of Fame, and the White Sox Hall of Fame. Billy married Gloria McCready in 1949. Their union produced 3 children, William Reed Pierce, Patricia Elaine Pierce Crowley, and Robert Walter Pierce. Billy petitioned Evergreen Park Lodge number 1171 AFNAM in Tinley Park, Illinois, and was raised to the sublime degree of Master Mason on August 28, 1971. He joined the Scottish Rite Valley of Chicago as a member of the Fall Reunion Class on November 1, 1971. Billy faithfully served the Scottish Rite in many ways in recognition of his outstanding commitment to humanity and to the Scottish Rite. Billy was coronated as a Sovereign Grand Inspector General, a 33rd degree Mason, on August 30th, 2011. Billy's other memberships and associations include, but are certainly not limited to, a long-time chairman of Medina Shriners Athletic Committee, Shriners International, chairman of the Chicago Baseball Cancer Charities, and as an elder in the Presbyterian Church. This year marked Brother Billy's 44th year as a member of the Masonic Fraternity. The passing of our brother from the cares and troubles of this transitory existence has removed another link in the fraternal chain that binds us together. May we who survive him be more strongly bound in the ties of union and friendship. So there you have it, Brother Walter Billy Pierce, in memoriam. And like I said, he passed away at the end of last month in July, and it's been almost a month now, and just an incredible individual, and just a wonderful time in the fraternity that he served, along with all of his other accolades and sport. That's it for this week. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Whence Came You. Check us out at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com, on Google+, and please don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. It's a tremendous effort, guys, and I really hope you guys enjoy it. They do show up in aggregate sites, and they are published all over the world, and they're inside some of your trestle boards on your lodges across the United States and elsewhere. It's a popular blog, and our writers are intensely honored and gracious that their writing pops up all over the place. So please check them out. In addition, please don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable, which goes live every Tuesday night at 10, 9 Central. It's a great show. You'll learn a lot, and we have a lot of fun. We are 5 Masons from around the country, sometimes around the world, depending on who our guest is, and we leave no question unasked. Usually, if we think about a tough question, we ask it. I mean, the show is not tied to any Grand Lodge or anything, so we are just Masons talking about Masonry on the level and open to the public. You know, obviously no secrets are being discussed or anything, but we do have a great time, and I think you will all enjoy that show. It is a video program that goes live on Tuesday nights, as I said, but it is also a Masonic podcast on iTunes and a few other places if you care to check that out. So please do. If you tried to visit our website, themasonicroundtable.com, over the last couple days it was down. Many thanks to Brother John Ruark, who spent quite a amount of time putting that back up for us. So much thanks there. And that's it. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.